Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The TakeCast. My name is Davis Maddock. Of course, you guys can find me on Twitter, at Davis Maddock. In this episode of the show, I'm joined by my good buddies, Peter Overzet and Patrick Corain, and we kind of just took a temperature check of fantasy football through 6 weeks. Obviously, we had to do some zero RB victory laps. We talked about the Juju Smith-Schuster situation, obviously got into some arguments about how to use our fab budget on our co-managed season-long teams, but overall, I think just a pretty fun conversation about what fantasy football has been like this season, you know, amidst the global pandemic and just all of the absolute absurdities with all of the injuries and the underperforming, highly drafted running backs and wide receivers thus far. So I hope that you guys enjoy it. I obviously love talking to Pat and Pete. And if you want to support the show, you can subscribe on patreon.com/takecast. And you can also just leave a rating and review on iTunes, Google Play, wherever you listen to podcasts. That's very useful and helpful. And now let's go ahead and get into the episode. Welcoming in my buddy, Peter Overzet, and also my buddy, Patrick Corain. Generally speaking, when we do this show, it's on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast feed, but we're doing it on the TakeCast feed this week because we have 6 weeks of football in, and I think we can start to draw some conclusions. I think we can start to, make a check mark of the takes that we've gotten right, takes that we've gotten wrong, and also I think evaluate the strength or the weakness of zero running back teams, something that we talked about pretty much all off season long. And I guess Pat, you were the big winner this last weekend. You know, you didn't play DeAndre Swift. So you didn't have to thank Peter in your tweet. I think you thanked everyone you've ever met, except for Peter Overzet after your bink. How are you doing, Pat?
Yeah, luckily I didn't play Swift, or I would have had to include Pete, send out another one just for him.
This dude picks my brain all week about my beautiful DFS thoughts. He wins $10,000 and immediately forgets about me.
Yeah, although you did try to talk me off Julio that morning. That would have been real bad, Pete, if I had swapped off that winning 10K Julio play, huh?
I was off of Julio. That was bad.
Yeah, well, you know, Julio Jones, turns out he's not dead yet. You were able to thank Wiggins for getting you on Trey Burton, who was the highest owned player at tight end.
Well, I almost everybody. The reason that I said that is because I had Trey Burton's a guy that has shown up in stat chasing. We picked him up in the main event. Both of our main event teams have him. We got him a couple weeks ago for super cheap. So I've been early to Trey Burton. I didn't need anybody to tell me about him. But just like the fact that he was going to be that chalky, I did almost swap him out because I just felt like it was just going to be kind of – you just didn't want to have that much chalk. But looking at the lineup and Wiggins just basically being like, there's so many ways to get off a lot of this chalk that you don't have to get off all the chalk. And he was just like reiterating this good play. So that kept me on Burton, which, you know, maybe if I had just gone to Fells, that would have been the better move, but it's a 15,000.
We don't play right tackles, dude. We don't play Darren Fells.
This field that I won had 15,000 entrants, so I didn't want to triple stack it. I had Watson, Cooks, and Fuller already. So I went with Burton chalk. What do you guys think about, like, looking back at that lineup? I had that. It was sort of a contrarian double stack for some reason. Watson, we knew, was going to come in underowned. I brought it back with Henry. And then I had this Julio, Justin Jefferson correlation piece that I thought would be underowned. And then I played Myles Gaskin chalk because I felt like I had this, you know, contrarian stack with the chalk bring back, contrarian correlation piece with the chalk running back. And then I ended up on a chalk tight end. But I think in some ways it, like, kind of helped me to be on chalk at that point. If you're like,
well, the thing is, at running back
chalk actually helps, or am I just?
Well, the thing is, at running back is that the chalk plays, like, there tend to only be like what, maybe 15 guys on any given slate who can even get more than 20 points. Like, seriously, like, just straight up, like, it's even in the realm of possibilities for them to get that many points. I mean, sometimes you'll have like the Matt Asiata games where they like randomly. Three touchdowns just happen, but like I make less of an effort than guys like Eric Bimefor or whatever to just like fade the running back chalk. Like, and I know that's something that Dink has been hammering on, of being like, oh, you know, fading the 30% owned running backs or whatever. I consider that much less. When I'm building my stuff, I'm trying to avoid chalk at quarterback, wide receiver, and tight end much more.
Yeah, and one, first of all, just to put it in perspective of why this win that Pat had is so impressive is because, you know, the field sizes I'm normally playing with the single entry, you're talking 5,000 or below. So a 15,000, that's like winning three spies worth of contestants. So you, to get to the top of that,
242 points, right?
Yeah. And I think the thing for you of why you were able to eat the chalk at some of those other positions, including tight end, was just because first the double stack was unique. And then that one-off correlation, the Jefferson and Julio were the biggest leverage points in that game. And they were mid-tier to upper-tier wide receiver prices, I guess 6,000 and what, 6,700. So most people couldn't get to those guys with the other chalky pieces they were jamming in. So I think it was like, even though you had chalky pieces, the construction was just going to be super unique.
This is something I've been thinking about, that the one-off correlations of like two wide receivers in the same game without the quarterback is so, it's like such a crazy good stack, because if you think about it, everyone kind of builds their stacks based off the quarterbacks, but that's the part of the stack that matters the least, because quarterbacks are basically going to get between 25 and 35 points in GPP winning lineups. Like I think Dak maybe had 40 against the Browns that week when I did well. And then he had Peter, when you guys won in the luxury box, or not the luxury box, the whatever it was.
Game changer. Yeah.
The game. Yeah. He like he had a bunch of points, and then Josh Allen had a 40.1 earlier in the year. But like the quarterback is actually like the least important part in terms of like the total points. So having the two wide receivers going against each other while also doing your other stack, you know, with whatever quarterback and then the bring backs that you want. I actually think that is low key a really underused part of lineup building.
Yeah. And Mike Leone talks about this a lot with getting your other parts correlated and just like increasing your correlation that way. And I did, this one worked so well too, because you have like Madison failed because of a bad game script where they're in catch up mode, which benefited Julio because they went through the passing game to put up points. And then they had to use Justin Jefferson in catch up mode, which kept Madison off the field. They're playing Amir Abdullah. So you're going, Madison was like super chalky. And so I didn't want to play him. I already had this chalky double running back. So it's kind of leverage off the chalk that I wasn't playing. I was also saying to Pete, this did not work out at all. But the defense that I used was the Browns. I ended up on them because I didn't play any of the like Chase Claypool chalk. So it was kind of, you know, my idea was I was trying to get leverage off that. That almost failed so hard that it cost me. So maybe, what do you think of that idea? Is that too cute? Or I'm just trying to find ways to like differentiate my defensive pool.
Well, certainly just like the idea in general of, I just don't want to play these defenses that are going to be 30% owned, which is what the Dolphins were. Like if you were just like, I'm literally just going to pick defenses at random just based off of low ownership projections, I think that would be fine. I think maybe it's a little bit galaxy brain to be like, I'm specifically playing the Browns defense to leverage off of the Chase Claypool chalk. That might be like a little bit too much gal brain.
Also, because it's wide receiver chalk and not like, it'd be better if it was running back chalk that you're leveraging off, I think.
Yeah. But
yeah.
And I think the other thing about those mini correlations, and I had a few of them that flopped big time, like Godwin, Aaron Jones was my favorite one last week.
That was mine that crushed me.
Yeah. And then I had a Hunt Juju as well, which,
Man. I did some Hunt Juju too.
Rest in peace, Juju Smith-Schuster. Rest in peace, buddy.
Right.
The reason why I'm angry at myself for not getting on, I actually did have a lineup with a Ridley, Justin Jefferson, but because I was just off of him. But the reason why that one was so brilliant is where like the Hunt, Juju, and the Aaron Jones, Godwin, those were just going to be low owned plays. You're not even really leveraging off of anything.
Yeah.
You're just getting your favorite play. Whereas Pat's was not only a nice in-game correlation, but massive leverage on the chalk in that game. And so that's something I want to think about more of, like those correlations, but also giving you leverage in a nice spot.
Yeah. And I think those are some of the things to consider. Pete, I'm wondering though, has your How are your Sunday mornings different now? Do you feel a little bit of pressure now that people are like, bro, Pete, he's a banker, bro? Are you feeling a little bit different on Sunday mornings when you're building teams and like when you're doing your bankroll building challenge show? Like, is it a different experience for you now?
Well, so the thing is it's different for two reasons. There is an element of that, but I'm also so much busier on Sundays. I'm writing the newsletter in the morning. Then I do a show on line movement from 11 to 12. And then like on top of it, you know, we're all trying to get in our bids now for FFPC at 10 a.m. Yep. We are all trying to get our season long lineup set there as well. Last minute change. I'm making sure Lauren's lineup is set, so she's not mad at me. So I'm just more busy. However, as far as the stress, I'm kind of like freed of it in that
because you're like, I'm gonna have a winning season regardless. That's kind of how I am right now. It's like it would be very hard for me to lose when I've already won.
And I will say too, because we do those shared lineups for the tilt space, like I've been talking more with Leonie about our lineups and Joe, and we'll check in and stuff on Saturday and then Sunday right before lock. And so I just feel more, I'm less like in my own head about stuff and I'm bouncing out ideas and someone will say that's ridiculous. Or, you know, I need to be more open when Pat and all of the quad bros are all on Julio and I'm like, shit, I'm scared of him. So I really do think that dialogue is super important for helping you see the slate from a clear angle on Sundays.
Yeah. Have you been so inspired by Peter's success in DFS that you felt that you had to match him?
Yeah, this is basically just competition driving me to make sure Pete wasn't the only guy on ship chasing who was banking GPPs. No, but Pete has gotten like way better at DFS. It has been
way better. Yeah.
Much. Yeah, you're and
he doesn't just stack the Cardinals every week.
Dude, I was so like, it's not even it, me being way better. Like the bar was so low. I was so trashed last year. Like just, I can't even, I will never go back and watch my old bankroll challenge videos. I can't, like, I was just so trashed.
Man, that two game slate last night on Monday night. I mean, that was, I've never been so excited for two football games to consecutively happen past one another. And we have the Mecole Hardman air ball, followed by the Dallas Cowboys scoring 3 points through 3.9 quarters. And it was truly one of like the worst moments of my football life. Like everyone just dunking on me on Twitter while Hardman airballs. And then my favorite team rolling out there with Andy Dalton and Andy Dalton looking like Andy Dalton. Like it was so brutal.
I'm mad at myself. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, did you see Davis mushing Mecole so hard all day leading up to that kickoff?
I've never, I get a very irrationally confident about players all the time.
Shit. And
I don't think I've ever in my heart of hearts felt actually as confident as I did that Hardman was like locked in for like 6 for 87 and a touchdown. Like I just was like, it would make no sense for him not to smash. And he literally did not get the ball.
Pat, tell the people what Davis had us sweating in our football guy ship taking because of Mecole Hardman. We were like a lock to win, and you guys thought we might lose because we were going against Mecole Hardman.
Yeah, we had, what do we have? Diggs, Lamb,
and Gallup. Lamb, Hopkins. Oh, no, Diggs, Lamb, Hopkins.
Yeah, and we were worried we were going to lose to a one-off Hardman.
I wasn't really. I was just kind of playing up with Davis. I knew Davis was so giddy about Hardman. I was just like, I don't know, dude. I don't know if we're even going
to take
Hardman.
Look, we had to make up 16 plus Hardman. Hardman could have thrown up, you know, a 30 burger. You know. Turns out he's just Tyreek Hill's backup, which is it's a tough scene.
Yeah, I know, he really is Tyreek Hill's backup. It's gross. He had less routes than Byron Pringle last night.
Yeah, so, and this actually, I mean, that's what they did last year. If you guys remember, Watkins actually missed two games last year. And we kind of had a mini version of this where we thought Hardman was going to blow up. I think they played the Colts and they played the Broncos. And Pringle actually had like 100 yards and a touchdown in the Broncos game when Watkins went out. And they just did the dead ass same thing. They didn't change anything. They just were like, yeah, we're going to do the exact same thing. And Tyreek is just Hill's backup. And tough.
Why did they spend a second round pick on Tyreek Hill's backup? I don't get it.
Because Tyreek is that important to the offense. Right.
But the other thing I was going to say for as it pertains to people dunking on Davis for the Hardman love, DeMarcus Robinson didn't even end up being good leverage. Like they came in similarly owned, which the whole thing is like
he was 30%, dude. They were the same.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm saying if Mecole's up here at 40% and Hardman is at 10, yes, Mecole Hardman is a fish play in that scenario. If they're all things are created equal, like Mecole Hardman is always going to be the better tournament play at the same ownership and same cost. Like that's not even close.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when I saw the, you know, when the cards flipped over, I was like, this is absurd. And I even played a good amount of DeMarcus Robinson. Actually, the funniest thing about all of that tilting last night was I didn't even lose money because I finished like third in, I don't know, I played like 900 entries last night, but I finished third in something that like got me to even on the night, even with locking Hardman in the showdown slate. But actually, I specifically wanted to talk to you about this because you and I just talked about this on Friday. Is Christian Kirk back?
No.
What?
No.
I was ready for you to say yes.
No, he's not. I thought he was after I watched the game, but I just did stat chasing. It just went live. And that was one of the big things that jumped out to me is that he's firmly not back. He had two targets. He had two targets in the game.
But they only threw like what, like 29 times or something?
Yeah, they didn't throw a ton, but
I believe Kyler, I have him in Scott Fishbowl, so I got all these negatives. I literally think he completed 9 passes.
Spin zone. They were using him creatively around the red zone. That little, you know, what should have been a handoff, but it counts as a pass.
Yeah, it's the Hardman play, dude. That's literally the Hardman play.
Guys, dare I say, that touchdown pass, that was the air raid. That wasn't the horizontal raid. That was a guy running a fly route down the field, just as Hal Mummy drew it up back in the Stone Ages.
Yeah, but it's against Dallas, who's just like this awful defense. Hopkins was like, and all of the underlying stats was, again, just kind of the absolute dominant wide receiver one. And he had like, off the top of my head, like 0.7 whopper or something this week, which is true wide receiver one level. And Kirk, I mean, yeah, he had that really nice touchdown catch. It was awesome. And that little flip play, but that was his only two targets. Larry Fitzgerald's still getting a ton of work.
Yeah, can we put together a GoFundMe to like have Larry Fitzgerald start an Arena Football League or something so like he can go do something else and let Kirk and Isabella play?
Remember when the Bucks cut Dare because they didn't want to have to go tell LaShawn that he was cut after just bringing him in? No one wants to have a hard conversation with Larry Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald's going to have to retire. He's going to be out there. He's going to be out there playing 61% of the Cardinals snaps literally until the day he says he can't do it anymore. I think that the Cardinals, this is my take, I think they would let him play until he was 40.
He has, seriously, on the season, he has a 0.76 yards per route run.
That's Zach Ertzian right there.
Yeah.
They need Kyler. Kyler's the only one in this building that can go and just everyone's pulling around like, who's going to go have this talk?
But so I've heard this. I don't know if I can, I obviously don't know Kyler, but what I have heard is that he is like a mega quiet guy, that he just is like the most quiet and unassuming dude. And so like, he just would not be the type of guy to be like, look, man, we got to play Isabella more. Like, he just would be like, yeah, you know, whatever.
You got to listen with the sound on in the broadcast, dude. Didn't you hear him talking about how DeAndre Hopkins had never been yelled at by a quarterback until he met Kyler Murray?
Well, I think it's probably different when they're on the field versus when they're like in the meeting rooms and stuff, I would imagine.
I don't know. Larry Fitzgerald. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say he doesn't yell at him.
Yeah, no, not a chance. Not a chance. And no one's, I mean, dude, is Kingsbury younger than Fitzgerald?
Maybe that's it. Maybe there's some weird, like...
Okay, let's look. Cliff Kingsbury, age... No, okay, he's like 3 years older.
He's screwing over Andy Isabella, I think. That was the...
Yeah, that's who loses, is Isabella just can't get on the field. And also, Kyler screwed Isabella. If you want to go back and get in the tape, Isabella had a touchdown. He had his man beat, and Kyler threw it to the left of where it needed to be. So Isabella, like, it actually looks terrible. It looks like Isabella quit on the route, but Kyler just overthrew it, but he had a touchdown.
I remember too. What was the show we were doing our happy hour stream on Friday, and we were trying to dance on Christian Kirk's grave. And I said, just wait until after the Cowboys game.
After the Cowboys.
And it seems like we're all right here in that he went off against the Cowboys, but there's still some reason for concern going forward.
Yeah, I would be shopping Kirk around this week. I mean, he was he looked great. It was exciting, but the volume isn't there. And I don't know. I mean, you're not going to get a better match from the Cowboys, and the Cowboys couldn't bring it. Like, it sucked. It just sucked that, you know, Dak went down at all, but especially before this game, right? Because
I mean, this game would have been so fun. This game would have been great, dude.
Yeah.
I wish that the Dallas Cowboys would. Game. Yeah. Is Kenyon Drake a great sell high or the greatest sell high, Pat?
I mean, I would say the greatest, but who's buying? I mean, he's.
Oh, dude. So, okay. In leagues that allow trading, like obviously, like in these high stakes leagues that we play in, you can't trade or whatever. But like in your 12 team home, your home league, not only like, first off, you can be like guaranteed touches, bro. He gets 15 carries a week. And then you will be able to sell it as like he turned a corner. Like you'd be able to be like, oh, you know, he had that ankle injury. He was wearing the walking boot at the beginning of the season, but he's good now.
Well, and also Pat, I mean, so Silva does his weekly thread asterisk tweets about his takeaways. And one of his takeaways was the buy low window on Kenyon Drake slammed shut. Where in the way my brain read it was the sell high window is firmly open right now.
Yeah. Okay. If that, I mean, he's a huge, huge sell. He's a huge sell.
Because their schedule's brutal coming up too, for at least from like the rushing DVP stuff or whatever, if you believe in that.
He is a highly game script dependent running back, and you've got a running back behind him, Chase Edmonds, that's probably more talented and operates like a true satellite back. Like, they get Seattle. I mean, that could be the game. This next game could be the game we were hoping Dallas would be, because Seattle can actually keep up and play fast and let Russ cook against them. It'll be great. But that's an Edmonds script. That's not a Drake script. I think not only is he a sell, but he's a sell, like an immediate sell.
How high does DK Metcalf go in main event drafts next year?
I mean, if he keeps up on this pace, I mean, he's a back end of the first round.
Yeah, if he ends up with 1,400 yards, or let's even say 1,200 yards and 14 touchdowns, which like he has 7 already. So I'm not even projecting like anything insane. Yeah, does he go where like Julio goes now?
Yeah, so you know, it's the main event, so he'd probably be like the fourth wide receiver off the board and go mid third.
who is next year's Leonard Fournette? This is a great question. Who is next year's Leonard Fournette?
Next year's Leonard Fournette. I mean, I guess our, you know, Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell, they're all the same player right now.
Well, Todd Gurley is not going to be on an NFL team next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 1 year deal, but he is the guy that comes immediately to mind. I mean,
he literally, what team signs him? It's not going to be the Falcons.
I don't know.
I mean, maybe he signs a veteran minimum deal in Seattle so that they can go into the season with like a dusty backup running back for the fourth year in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know.
One guy that comes to mind, it's a slightly different thing because I don't think he'd actually be cut. He's kind of maybe the 2019 version of Leonard Fournette, is David Montgomery. And
yeah, makes sense.
And I want your thoughts. I just got an offer. This is a shallow dynasty league.
Breaking news, Pat Corain receives a trade offer.
Yeah, I just got an offer. I'm co-managing this team, so I would have to talk my co-manager into doing this. He doesn't want to do it. We were just offered David Montgomery for Juju Smith-Schuster, and I kind of want to take it.
No.
I kind of want to take it.
No. Come on, because even what's the point? Like, what's the point of that? Like, you get David Montgomery as a running back, too, for, like, 4 more weeks until he's so bad that they have to start playing Artavis Pierce.
There's no one else to play.
No, see, that's the thing, is you always, like, we do fall in these traps with running backs where it's like, dude, there's no one else to play. But there's always someone else. There's literally it's CJ Anderson in 2018. There's always somebody out there. Like Isaiah Crowell, is he on an NFL roster? Tell me he couldn't be the starting running back for the Bears.
He totally could. David Montgomery looks like maybe a little less burst than Devonta Freeman right now.
One game to win a game. David Montgomery or Jonathan Taylor?
Oh, God.
No, Davis, you got to frame it like this is an internet meme. The aliens come down and want to play us in a one-on-one running back matchup. Which running back do we put up against the alien running back? David Montgomery.
It's not Jonathan Taylor. Where Jonathan Taylor started out the offseason as like literally one of the highest, hottest dynasty things. Like you probably could have gotten Dalvin Cook for Jonathan Taylor, honestly.
You're being too reactionary on this Jonathan Taylor stuff, man.
Dude, he looks terrible. Pat will back me up, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he won't.
I probably won't.
What do the stats say? I'm not watching the tape. What does it say?
The stats are not great either.
His receiving workload blew up for the first time.
Yeah, he got four targets.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was six targets for four catches. Did I read that wrong?
No, it was four for four.
Okay.
I will pull up his PFF stuff right now, but I know it's not very good because he has, well, PFF grades a lot of their stuff based on like broken tackles and stuff, and he's not done any of that.
But like, so at least from the watch the tape, remember it was week one where he took that screen pass and everyone was like, holy cow, this is the guy we thought he was. So are we saying that he lost some bursts since week one? Like, that's where I don't play this film watcher game.
Yeah, also, like, it's so early. He's a super productive running back. He's athletic. Like, I'm not that concerned about, like, whether or not he can play running back. I'm pretty sure he can play running back.
Okay, but here's the thing. Like, I think there's a little bit of reason to just start considering stuff like that because, I mean, we already saw it with CH. I know he looked really good on Monday night, but he looked really bad the five games before that, and the team brought in Le'Veon Bell. Like, it doesn't matter.
How could this possibly turn out well for him? You know, after we saw what happened with Leonard Fournette.
Like, who cares? Really?
Who cares if they brought in Le'Veon? I mean, from a dynasty perspective, they signed Le'Veon Bell to a one-year deal with incentives. Oh, yeah,
for dynasty, it doesn't matter at all. But it does matter. It does matter in the context of, like, is Jonathan Taylor going to be a guy that the Colts view as someone who can handle 250 carries and 80 targets a year? Or do they view him as, like, fancy Jordan Wilkins?
But see, think about this. Like, all of these running backs who were drafted early, this was the first week DeAndre Swift got meaningful touches. J.K. Dobbins still hasn't got meaningful touches. Like, I don't think we can make opinions on what the team thinks about them from, like, a macro standpoint this early into their careers.
I am worried about the Colts because I feel like Frank Reich could have, like, Bo Jackson and he'd split Nyheim Hines with him. I just don't get, like, they just love the committees.
They love, but, I mean, they think Frank just loves Nyheim Hines. Like, dead ass, I literally think he just, like, he's like, Nyheim Hines is great. He's a great guy.
What if I told you the Titans do have Bo Jackson and they give Jeremy McNichols a lot of burn?
Yeah, Jeremy McNichols, back from the dead.
I tell you that I'm interested in fading Bo Jackson for $7,600 on DraftKings.
What did they, is the big dog on the main slate this week, Davis?
I just made my placeholder. I'll look. If he is, he's probably not in my placeholder. I probably just scrolled right past him.
7,500 versus Pitt. I can't wait.
Oh man.
I can't wait.
Actually, I can play him though.
You think no one's going to play him?
Well, I think less people will play him because the sort of people that are inclined to play Derrick Henry are going to be less inclined to play him against the Steelers. You see what I mean?
Yeah. That said, isn't this the ultimate what wins out, the recency bias game log watchers or the matchup truthers?
Yeah. So when you go into if you go to build by hand, you're going to go click on Derrick Henry and you're going to see that red second DVP next to Derrick Henry. What wins, dude? Well, it's the old, this is Pete, get inside the mind of a hand builder. What happens?
I know. So I'm looking at the over-unders too, just the early ones. That game has a 52, and there's a lot of nice ones because we're getting Seattle, Arizona. We're getting Green Bay, Houston. We're getting New Orleans, Carolina. So I am actually going to side with you. I think he's going to probably go under-owned this week.
Guys, is the Derrick Henry thought leader here. I'll say that he's... Oh, God. Hey,
the three of us, only one of us has him in the main event, though.
No, we have him in the main event with Crack Rock.
That doesn't count.
Yes, it does. We drafted a main event team. It has
You guys cranked purple.
It doesn't count for you either. You didn't even want him in Silva Bully.
Yeah, it counts less for you.
I really wanted Miles Sanders instead.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like he seems like he'd be like 15% owned this week. Because I think
that's a jam. Derrick Henry at 15% is like actually a jam.
I think the Steelers are going to keep people off him.
I think I need 10% and under for me to jam the big dog.
I feel like the mainstream media is not covering the fact that Jeremy McNichols has played 39% of the Titans snaps in their last two games, though. Like, I feel like the MSM is lying to us.
Do people know Jeremy McNichols had a higher yards per carry than Derrick Henry on Sunday?
I don't think they do.
No joke. How is that even possible?
It's
real. It's real. I looked at it with my own eyes.
Because 80% of Derrick Henry's runs go for 2 yards.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unreal. Jeremy McNichols had over 8 expected points in that game. Henry had like 19. So they were really close in their workload. And their snap count, as you said, was pretty damn close. So, I mean, McNichols, I think we have him in the main event, right, Pete? Picked him up.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of contingent value. Evans on IR. Got pick him up.
I mean, he is the guy that we thought Evans was going to be. Like, I know Evans has... Well, I actually also am a long-term Jeremy McNichols truther. Like, I've been waiting to hold Jeremy McNichols as, like, a legitimate contingent value handcuff for, like, 4 years now.
So, yeah, I hope that, like, the RotoViz, like, servers are down and the old podcasts aren't there, because I said some dumbass shit about Jeremy McNichols in the press.
I mean, also, too, like, if we're going to do the whole running back don't matter thing, we love Darrington Evans. Jeremy McNichols is crushing. Henry's crushing. It makes sense that the Titans, I saw the ESPN metric 6th in run blocking win rate. I mean, they have a great offensive line. Like, you get anyone there behind them with a pulse, and they're that efficient. They have other weapons you have to worry about in the pass game. Of course the running backs are going to crush in that offense.
Yeah. But also, Jeremy McNichols is awesome.
Yeah, Jeremy McNichols is great. Okay.
I love how you guys want to be defense don't matters, except if it's the unheralded second back, in which case that dude is the GOAT.
Yeah, that is
literally, you just summarized like my entire career in fantasy football. The main running back, he doesn't matter at all, but this coach should be fired for not playing Tony Pollard enough snaps. Like, that's the way it goes.
Pollard looked good there in that one drive he got.
Dude, the Dallas Cowboys fumbling meme, it's like, it's gone too far. It's like, I believe they have fumbled twice in every game, and they have yet to recover one of their own fumbles. So no one on Dallas has fumbled while their own teammate recovered it. Every fumble has been lost.
That's pretty wild. Wow.
Like, what's the point? Okay, I have a candidate for next year's Leonard Fournette, and it is not going to make Pat Crane or myself very happy.
No. Oh, no. Davis, come on. This podcast is supposed to be how we are riding high.
This is an ambush. Holy
cow. I'm sitting here looking at all of the leading rushers this year. And the two names for guys who can finish as top 12 running backs this year and not be top 30 running backs next year are James Robinson and Ronald Jones.
How dare you? How dare you, Davis?
Also, when you say Leonard Fournette, I immediately go to the guy that was drafted really early that people keep giving chances to, keep drafting because of the workload. Like, I understand what you're saying about Rojo, but
he won't be drafted that high. That
archetype.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won't be drafted high enough. The whole thing is that Ronald Jones is like perpetually disrespected. He's not in the type of running back profile that I typically target. It's just that he's been so undervalued in the last two season long drafts that I just like went a little insane.
I mean, he's going to hit 1,000 yards by like week 11.
Yeah. I just never really got like why people just hated him so much, because he actually has the profile that I normally avoid because I think it's overpriced.
Cause he catches weird with his hands, dude.
He does catch weird with his hands.
He holds them at a weird angle the coaching staff.
He catches balls twice. He tries to get 2 catches per one target. Yeah.
Pat, how much would you pay out of your winnings if you could have swapped in, like, you still win that tournament, the 10,000, but you get Ronald Jones in the lineup for the screenshot, for the brand? How much would you pay to have that retroactively changed?
I don't know, maybe like 2K.
Pat, my big win this year, Ronald Jones in the flex, bro.
Oh man, that's pretty nice. Yeah, I'm pretty jealous.
You had to have had some Rojo. He was a great tournament.
I put Rojo on FanDuel, but I didn't have Watson
on FanDuel.
Rojo was a great play.
Yeah.
We're still waiting to see how that lineup did, right?
Yeah, we don't know.
I think I could have won the whole thing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I wonder how much money I have left on FanDuel. Oh, not great. Very bad weekend for me on FanDuel.
I min cash the Roto Grinders $100 single entry series. Little Lamar double stack where the double stack doesn't hit, but you nail the Fulgham bring back, you know, easy game. Yeah.
I've gotten better on DK after Pete, you know, tucked me under his wing and taught me the ways of the world. But
it'd be nice if Twitter posts reflected that.
But FanDuel, man, I need to pick your brain on that, because it has not been It's not been a good season for me on FanDuel.
Davis is the FanDuel thought leader, man.
On FanDuel, people double stack way less than they do on DraftKings because the hand builders go in. They're like, you don't get the bonuses, and it's all about the touchdowns and blah, blah. Like, so I just double stack and bring back, and those are way more unique constructions there. But honestly, now that the Dallas Cowboys don't play anymore, I just really find myself having a hard time building lineups on DraftKings. Like, I don't really know what to do now that Dak is gone. Feels really difficult. Like, I feel like the fun part of fantasy football is gone.
God, I thought this was gonna be an upbeat pod. Fucking
oh, we're about to get upbeat.
You tell me Rojo's the next Leonard Fournette, and then you don't even like the lineup anymore.
Next thing you know, you're gonna tell Pat he's gonna be on the wrong side of variance and go broke by the
I think that Ronald Jones has a chance to be overdrafted next year, especially if he does super, like, he's crushing right now, but that the lingering threat of Keyshawn Vaughn remains, right? Like, it's lingering
for sure. And they don't play him on third downs
at all. Yeah,
they don't play him in hurry up situations and 2 minutes, you know, situations. They just don't play him. I don't get it because they do throw to him on early downs. And I think he's done pretty well as a pass protector this year. So it doesn't really make sense, but I'm not going to pretend it's not a thing. It's like firmly a thing. So, yeah, I mean, he's got lots of paths to being overvalued. The whole thing with him is that for some reason he just never is. So I've just been able to like quadruple down on him and it's, you know, it's been profitable, but
not being punished on quadrupling down on Ronald Jones has been great. Cause I had a main event draft happen after Leonard Fournette signed, and we got him in the 10th round.
Yeah. I remember that one.
We start him every week and
it's unreal. It's unreal.
And the thing is too, is because this offense has been pretty solid. You're gonna, even if Fournette starts to eat into some touches, like, there's going to be a lot of touchdown opportunities. He's going to be their lead back on first and second downs. Like, every week, and like the worry and all everyone's, you know, worry about him is like, oh, he's going to miss a pass block and get benched forever. But every week he performs like this, his floor raises like a tick.
And he builds the trust with Brady a little bit more.
Yeah. And the ceiling's still going to be there, but that floor keeps going up, which is what you feel really good about when you're starting him in these main event leagues.
All right. Yeah. I want to pick your guys' brain on Travis Fulgham. Is this like a 2 week wonder, or I actually think this is my position now. Wentz seems to be a big trust guy, and that's why he is always just loaded Ertz with targets, like to the point where, I don't know if you guys remember, 2 years ago there was an ESPN article about all of Wentz's teammates hate him. They think he's a bad leader because all he would do was go to Bible study with Zach Ertz and then target him like 13 times in a game. Like, that was like a real story that was published, like an actual thing that was out there. And I think that we are seeing a real, I think we're seeing a real thing with Travis Fulgham, and that even when DeSean Jackson and Jalen Reagor and Alshon Jeffrey get back, we are still going to see Fulgham play significant snaps. Where are you at, Pat?
I'm there. I think that he could be like a co-wide receiver one even when Jackson gets back. I do think though that Goddard, yes. He could, because he's supposed to be back this week, and now with Ertz out, I think he could slot into a huge role and kind of be the number one option in that offense. So Fulgham isn't necessarily going to smash going forward, but yeah, I think he's like pretty legit. I mean, the underlying opportunity stats he's been getting are awesome. And I he's not a great prospect. There's not like a lot to like about him heading into the season. But at this point, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there. Guys like Greg Ward didn't step up. Fulgham has stepped up in a way that I think looks somewhat sustainable going forward. It'll tick down with Jackson coming back, but I think he'll still be pretty involved.
What about you, Pete?
Yeah, I don't, you know, there just seems to be so much availability in that offense, and guys that come in and perform right away. I'm old me used to write these guys off because I'm like, I didn't like them as a prospect. They're a no right. name, whatever. Same. They're just gonna get cucked right away. But like, even the Dallas Goedert, he is eligible to come off of IR this week, but there's still no guarantee that he's gonna do. Like,
I mean, so is Reagor, by the way.
He's eligible. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I think the timeline puts Reagor a couple weeks away, but
I think in general too, of like a way to think about this, and people might, this is another reason why you might be able to get McNichols still for cheap on waivers, is because people, and I do this too, we think in terms of like, okay, who's going to help me win in the fantasy playoffs from like 14 to 16. And you're like, oh, McNichols and Fulgham might not be relevant by then. But if you switch your time frame to how am I going to win over the next 2 to 3 weeks? Like those guys become absolute smashes. And So I think just, you know, rethinking your time frame, even if we have one game where Derrick Henry misses, where Jeremy McNichols gets the bell cow, that like pays off that $4 bid, you know, 10 times over.
Yeah.
Okay. Good $4 bid guy here. LaMichael Perine. He's like the opposite though, where I don't think you want to start him right now because the Jets just cannot generate enough fantasy points to make their running back one even worth it. But I'm building this upside case in my head where Darnold comes back, Gase gets fired, and the Jets perform like a bottom 20% NFL historical team instead of a bottom, what, like they go from being the 2008 Lions were the 0-16 Lions or whatever, and then they go to just being like your standard 3-13 team. And like I think Perine with no Frank Gore competition and, you know, Ty Johnson, he's like very much whatever. I think what I wrote in my waiver wire piece this week is I think he can settle into like 13 fantasy points per game, which is like, that is it. That would be huge if he actually became that from weeks 10 to 17.
Well, Pete and I started him in the main event this week, so we're on board.
You'll have to see it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the whole thing is just like, is this front office or coaching staff just like so brain dead that they are just going to continue to jam Frank Gore week after week, or will they ever phase him out and be like, maybe we evaluate the younger talent on our roster?
When does Gase get fired? I don't understand what's going on.
Well, they just want to get the number one pick, right? That's all they care about. And they probably have better odds of getting it now with Gase stays the coach.
I mean, that's true.
That's kind of like the Reddit conspiracy theory way to approach why Gase is still the coach. The real answer is probably just like, you know, the owners don't care that much and they're like, whatever.
Gase must just be like one-on-one, just must light up a room. He must be the funnest hang. Like you go to the steakhouse with this dude, he's getting a second bottle of wine. Yeah. Like
he's passing smelling salts out to everyone.
I mean, it makes no other sense how he can keep his job this long.
It's crazy. But yeah, I mean, if he were to go, I mean, why is this team playing Frank Gore? It's crazy.
Why does Frank Gore, in the middle of a global pandemic, want to be playing for the New York Jets to make like, he's got to be on like a $1.2 million contract. I mean, is Frank Gore in debt? Like, has Frank Gore not invested his money wisely over his career and he like needs the money? That's why Adrian Peterson is still playing. Like Pat laughs, but Adrian Peterson is still playing because over the course of his career, he did not manage his money wisely and he's massively in debt. So he's got to be 34 years old, like, you know, taking 12 carries a week for the losing Detroit Lions. Like that could be what Frank Gore is doing. But if Frank Gore is not in debt, what the fuck is he doing? Why is there any reason for Frank Gore to be playing for the Jets at his age? It's inexcusable.
See, but I don't understand it from Gase and the coaching staff's perspective. These guys are gamers, dude. Gore literally is like, what do you want me to go do right now?
Sure. Yeah.
As the guy that's going to go to the CBS booth to do play-by-play, like the dude just wants to play football. I've actually never even seen like Frank Gore interviews. He's pretty quiet and muted, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've never, now that you say that, I don't think I've ever heard him speak.
Well, there are still players that I don't even know what they look like. I still am not 100% sure what Blake Jarwin looks like. And I also don't know what Frank Gore sounds like.
I know what, that's weird you say that. I know what Dalton Schultz looks like better than what Blake Jarwin looks like, because after I had to go back and watch his college shit after Jarwin got hurt, because I was like, is this dude just a straight up right tackle? Which, by the way, I thought the answer was yes. So I did not make any big bids on him in any of my leagues, which I think was probably a process mistake at that point.
You were so upset a few weeks ago, but now he looks like he's dust. He looks like he's
dust. It's not his fault though. Had Dak stayed healthy, my guess is that Dalton Schultz would have been the second best waiver wire pickup of the year in FFPC leagues other than Mike Davis.
Myles Gaskin.
Yeah, Gaskin. Is Myles Gaskin the starting running back for the Miami Dolphins next year? I think that's a really interesting dynasty question.
I think so. I mean, maybe they draft some. My guess is that they probably draft a guy in like the third round, and we're dealing with like a Keyshawn Vaughn type of sweat.
I actually trust the Dolphins to actually draft a pretty sick running back, though. I feel like they wouldn't they wouldn't botch that one as much. Like, the just based on the type of guys you're telling, they bring in Breida. They, I guess we can forget the Howard thing, but they trade for Lynn Bowden.
They trade for Lynn Bowden. Yeah.
They seem to identify the traits that are interesting, and they're getting them at a cheap price. So I like the like third, fourth round call, but I actually think they could knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I think that makes sense.
Let's talk about our ship taking team, man, because
unbelievable. So
this
good.
Team is fire. It's 5-1. Our skill position players are just insane. Kamara, Rojo, Gaskin. We got Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, the two wide receivers I'd want, you know, basically above everybody. And then our quarterback and tight end situation is awful right now. We have lots to work to do, fellas. We had Ryan Fitzpatrick after losing Dak, and now we lose Fitzpatrick. And then we have Gerald Everett stepping in for the ghost of Zach Ertz.
Yeah, Everett is not, I don't think, a viable option as a starter right now because he's not getting enough routes. Even in this game, he ran less routes.
Yeah, Higbee led them in receiving yards. And I granted, it was like 51 yards, but Higbee was their leading wide receiver. I actually, because I am, well, everything I do in fantasy is just revolves around like my own teams and my own interests. I went and looked up some Higbee stuff. I think he's running a little bit bad because he's actually out there all the time.
Yeah.
Like, he's just out there. And so will he have a run at like he did at the end of last year? Probably not. But I would guess that he probably ends up finishing what, like tight end 9, everything said and done, if he stays healthy, because he's just out there so much.
He's out there a lot. And the thing is, I mean, he has a 19.4% targets per route run on the season. Everett's at 19.7%. Those numbers are like, good, not great.
Yeah.
But they're both out there. I feel like they would, if there was one guy out there, there would probably be, they're overlapping sometimes. So their targets per route run would probably go up. And that tight end would be out there for like 75, 80% of dropbacks and he'd smash. So if you just had one of these guys, they would potentially be a league winner. But so that puts you in a position where like we can never drop Everett because he's like one of these rare tight ends that actually has contingent value and maybe we could start him. And the same goes for Higbee.
We're going to have to start him, I think.
Well, Firkser's on waivers.
And, I'm not. No.
Fells is on waivers, dude.
You know.
I'd rather Firkser than Fells.
When I go to put our bids in, I'm putting in Richard Rodgers, and I'm being dead ass.
Oh my god,
this is going to be such a disaster this week.
I guess it depends. Like if Goddard's not available,
Richard Rodgers is in for 100% of the Philadelphia Eagles offensive snaps.
I don't hate it.
It's like one of those plays that like has literally no ceiling, but you are just locking up like 6 targets probably.
I mean, Fells is the guy if Akins is out again.
Fells looks really good. He looks good. He had a really nice game. But is Akins supposed to be out? Oh, he's week to week. Yeah. Fells probably looks like the best.
And that's a great game too, that Green Bay Tennessee game.
How long do you guys think Darren Fells has been in the NFL?
He's 32 years old. So like, I don't know, 10 years.
He's been in the NFL for 8 seasons. All right. Yeah. His career high in targets was last week.
Yeah. He's like
a career backup. Pardon me if I'm not wanting to go higher than a buck on Darren Fells. Well,
oh God, Davis, don't cost us our starting tight end because of the age. Because you can't handle the age.
We literally need a starter. Like,
I would literally rather go. I would literally, for a dollar, I would rather have. I would rather have Richard Rodgers, and I'm being 100% honest.
Dude, this all 22 stuff is just—it's messing you up in the head.
I just told you that Darren Fells has been in the NFL for 8 years, and he has had one game with 6 or more targets. 7 or more targets.
It was this past week, and he scored a touchdown on a nice catch the previous week, and Jordan Akins is going to be out again. Like, what?
I have a Bayesian process, Davis.
I'm
fine with it, but don't you think the FFPC grinders are going to be like $67 on Darren Fells?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I have no interest in that. How many points apart do you think that Fells and Rodgers will be in projections if Goddard does not play?
This is above my pay grade.
Rodgers will project for more.
6 points. Really? Is he going to project for more? I don't know, dude. He's getting 17% of his routes. Like, he's barely run any routes.
So this is the Eagles roster if Goddard is not able to play. We got Folgum. We got Deontay Burnett. We got John Hightower. We have Greg Ward. We have J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. We have Quez Watkins.
Say it right.
Arcega-Whiteside.
Thank you.
Okay. Then we have DeSean Jackson, who may or may not play. I know that he said he wanted to play this week, but like with DeSean Jackson, I always lean on the side of him not playing because he never plays. Then at tight end, they have Richard Rodgers, Hakeem Butler, and this fellow by the name of Jason Kroom, who I did not know was on the team and wasn't even in my sheet last week, who has, I guess he did not play in the NFL at all in 2019 and was on the Eagles practice squad this last year.
He ran
year.
One route. You don't think you got to worry about him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying you don't have to worry about him because Richard Rodgers is going to play every down.
I'm actually coming around on this dick rod take.
I mean, it's so bad. Like,
but here's
Rodgers never did anything in Green Bay. He's like,
he had a 7-touchdown season. So take it back.
He dropped that onside kick recovery and cost him a playoff game.
Here's a little game theory too of why I like this dick rod play. If we get him, we just start him on Thursday. Whereas if we're rolling the dice on Fells, we're having to wait until Sunday to find out if he's inactive and all that. So I'm on the dick rod train. Let's do it.
Actually, let me take.
We all know why you like dick rod. So you can say dick rod.
As a 23-year-old, he handled 85 targets and had 8 touchdowns. Richard Rodgers did.
What year was that?
That was 2015.
This is why people tune into the tape for evergreen content on third-string Eagles tight end.
Yeah, it just quoted me what a dude did in 2015 as if it's predictive for Thursday.
Look, man, we're talking. We reference 2015 stuff all the time. We talk about
we do. We reference 2015 stuff all the time. Then Zach Ertz would have been awesome this year.
Hey, Pat, have a little bit of a Bayesian process. Dick Rod's a great play.
He's a great play. Well, I was looking at my teams this week, and you know who I realized is conspicuously absent from. Literally, I have him in no high stakes leagues. James Robinson feels like a big collective miss from these three dudes right here. I mean, this is supposed to be our bread and butter, and we got none of that.
I was promised an upbeat pod, so I'm going to pivot this to a brag, which is that zero running back has been so effective this year.
It's unbelievable.
You can whiff on James Robinson. You can go light on Miles Gaskin. You can miss Mike Davis. It doesn't matter. There's so many running backs out there that you can just – pick whoever you want. You can be casual. You don't have to go all in on whoever. It's been great.
Well, let's just take a look at the top 30 running backs in ADP, and let's just
funeral music.
Dance on some graves. Saquon Barkley, may he rest in peace. Christian McCaffrey teams, other than me and Leone's team that's in first place of the Silver Bullet, you're having a tough time. Nick Chubb, not great. What's the verdict on Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first round? Is just the fact that he is not dead enough to make it justifiable?
I think he's justifiable at this point.
Yeah. Josh Jacobs. Turns out week one against the Panthers when he had 6 receptions was not a good reason to adjust our priors. Joe Mixon, 1 good game. Austin Eckler, injured. Kenyon Drake, enough said. Miles Sanders, enough said. Todd Gurley, absolute coffin. Chris Carson, what's the verdict, Pat? What's the verdict, Chris Carson?
It's a smash.
Yeah, I think he's well worth the pick.
Okay, James Conner, well worth the pick, even though he's losing all of his goal line work to Chase Claypool?
I mean, that one's a little iffier because he was more expensive typically.
You had to draft him in the second round in FFPC. Yeah,
not great. A lot of opportunity costs there. Could have gotten
David Johnson, Michael Leone's favorite, David Johnson.
It's been barely usable.
It's gross.
Leonard Fournette.
Oh, it's David Johnson. That's the Leonard Fournette, dude. He's still
under David. I don't think David Johnson will be on a team next year.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't either, but it'll take until like week 3 or whatever.
Oh yeah, that's fair. All right. Melvin Gordon.
He's going to lose his job to Philip Lindsay here in like 2 weeks.
Yeah. We need Pat to apologize to us for his, anti-Philip Lindsay bias in the off season.
Yeah, he smashed this week without Gordon. Sorry, guys.
He did great. He had 100 yards rushing in a game they weren't.
I know when I listen to Stat Chasing later, Pat's going to be like, he didn't get any high value touches. It was
he got two green zone touches.
Yeah, but I literally don't think he was targeted.
He wasn't targeted, but Royce Freeman only got one target. And then the coach speak after the game is that they're going to go back to the plan, which means that Royce Freeman won't be involved. So yeah, Lindsey was a much better pick than I thought he was. You guys are
all right. Raheem Mostert. I think that one's like not really fair because it was all injury related. He actually, I'm going to say that I would have gotten this one wrong if Mostert didn't get hurt. He would have smashed with a healthy season, I think.
I agree. I think Mostert, like the thesis of the play was correct. It's just he hasn't been healthy.
Now we're starting to enter like fifth, sixth round territory with.
Yeah, but there were still terrible picks here. Mark Ingram, Devin Singletary, David Montgomery, Jordan Howard, Marlon Mack. Kerryon Johnson, like just these were the worst picks.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's interesting to me is obviously we've had a ton of wide receivers who have been injured as well, but the whole thesis behind drafting these running backs early, the Mixons, the Chubbs, the Jacobs, was this volume projection in a floor.
Was wrong.
People thought we could have this floor. And what we're seeing is these guys are as volatile and as spiky as the wide receivers. Yeah, Joe Mixon pops off. Well, yeah. So does Julio. Yeah, you know, like Julio hasn't had good games, been banged up, but it's been like the same volatility range. And then on top of it, you aren't benefiting if you weren't picking up all of these guys that were churning on the waivers and getting the Miles Gaskin and all of these guys who are stepping into monster roles. Like, who have been the breakout wide receivers that you took late? I guess Robbie Anderson, I guess Chase Claypool, yeah. If you were on those guys. But those guys have been, they're much harder to predict. I feel much better projecting Jeremy McNichol stepping into a starting role if Henry goes down than whoever the John Hightower dick man is on the Eagles.
Well, I mean, there were lots of, I mean, T. Higgins looks awesome. Justin Jefferson looks awesome. But those were guys that we were targeting, at least in that profile, right?
Yeah, but that's the thing. So we got to say, I'm going to hand myself an L for being like, I got to draft all these rookie wide receivers and I literally don't know if I drafted Justin Jefferson once over like 600 teams.
I don't have him in like really at all in redraft, but I did get on him in
Dynasty. Claypool. I have Claypool in the Drafters Best Ball Championship a bunch, but I don't have any Justin Jefferson.
I have a lot of Claypool and Underdog, but I don't have really any Justin Jefferson. Occasionally, maybe, but not.
Why did we miss on Justin Jefferson?
I don't know.
The Vikings? I can tell you exactly why, because we're drafting Rager everywhere.
That is exactly why.
It was too in these pockets, right? Like we just decided that we were going to put all of our chips on Rager and Chenault, which means we didn't have a lot of Jefferson. We luckily have some Lamb who is going a little earlier. We avoided kind of the Judy landmine, which seems to be a landmine. So
I don't think any of us were interested in him though.
No. And then Ayuk is another guy that I still wouldn't mind having a few more shares of here down the stretch. Sean over at Rotoviz just did a piece on like, if you are bummed about missing out on some of these breakouts, like if you miss Swift, buy Dobbins now. And he had one where if you missed out on Jefferson, buy Brandon Ayuk now.
Yeah, Ayuk's being used. His eight out is
like 14. Ayuk looks incredible.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned. He's running the most routes, and he's getting used deep.
You think he's getting pigeonholed like in the Gallup spot though?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
Do we think, Pete, do you want to get your Swift Stradamus hat on and tell us that J.K. Dobbins is going to do in week 8? No, we need him to tell us that J.K. Dobbins does in week 8 what Swift did in week 6 after the Ravens come off their bye.
It might not even be a bit, right? You know, I was listening to your waiver wire show. You know, we have the narrative, the rookie running back coming off the bye. But more importantly, Mark Ingram's banged up right now. Like there's legit questions that Jim Harbaugh wouldn't even commit. He just said, I think he'll be ready after the bye. So like if you remove Mark Ingram from there, yes, Gus Edwards is going to get the majority of that early down row, but it was the same thing for Swift. We still knew Adrian Peterson was going to be involved, but if we can just get a few extra touches,
we just need Kerryon to go away or AP, one of the two.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm talking about for Dobbins. And yeah. I think he's going to have a very big, fast finish. Unlike
Cam Akers. The Ravens, though. Like,
man. Oh, yeah. Let me publicly take an L. Cam Akers, bro. It's not happening for him. Daryl Henderson is better. And Malcolm Brown is the Rams version of the mentor. Cam Akers is going to be maybe a guy to draft in the 13th round next year. But yeah, it's not going to happen for him. That is it true that he did not play a snap in the game on Sunday night?
I believe one.
He did. He played one snap, did not receive a touch or a carry.
McVay with these rookies, man. He's getting the Darrell Henderson treatment from last year. It's just like he doesn't exist.
Yeah. Tough scene. Tough scene for Cam Akers. Weird year for rookie running backs. Like, generally, you kind of expect them to crush, and there's not been much crushing.
Swift looks like he could be crushing down the stretch. I love his profile. He's got that, like, Aaron Jonesy type profile where he doesn't need to get all the touches, but he gets used around the goal line. He gets used on receptions. It's really ideal.
Let Adrian Peterson have the crap. Let Adrian Peterson run on second and eight. Like, who cares?
Yeah, that just keeps Swift healthy. I'm really excited about Swift. We have him on the quad managed team with Blair and Hassan because Hassan was really on Swift. But don't really have too much of him elsewhere. The running backs in Dynasty were so expensive that, you know, I was going after the wide receivers. But yeah, Swift is like a really nice buy right now. And I'm hoping that carry-on goes away, frankly, because I don't think it's too much to ask for Peterson to go away.
I can't believe how bad me and my buddy's team is in the Kentucky State Fantasy Football Championship. We just hit like every landmine and you guys got Mike Davis for a buck and you're not even winning our league. Like, I'm furious that you guys aren't winning it.
And we also now have, so we have Rojo and Dalvin Cook, and then we hit Mike Davis for the stretch. And now we're getting McKinnon here for a few games while Mostert's out. So this team's cooking.
Yeah, how weird does it feel for you guys to be starting running backs in the flex in some of these leagues? Is this the first time ever?
No, this happens a lot. That's like kind of the crazy thing.
The zero RB thing. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, we end up starting by this time. We're often flexing running backs. It's not actually unusual. I wish it was more unusual because, you know, it feels like every year we lose a guy to an ACL tear, wide receiver or something.
Yeah, rest in peace, Cortland Sutton.
Rest in peace. So it happens every year, but and then you always whiff. There's always a couple guys that don't quite hit. So yeah, you end up like churning and getting all these running backs, and then you end up throwing them in your lineups during the bye.
Let's end it here. What's the deal with Juju, man? Like, for real.
What would you take in Dynasty? You want me to reject this?
I obviously have him in all these leagues, and I just think I just don't think you can trade him. I think he is, I think you can trade for him. I think trading for him is reasonable.
What would you trade for him?
Like, some sort of mid-tier running back guy. Like, I think I would trade here. Actually, here's a good one. I would sell low on Cam Akers to get Juju. Like, if someone was like, taking the long lens with Akers, and they're like, you know, he was just a second round pick. Long term, we think McVay is good. Like, you know, the offense is going to put up a lot of points, whatever. I would send away Cam Akers to get Juju. And an unrelated note, I did just sell Cam Akers for Mecole Hardman in a dynasty league.
I've been meaning to put out some offers for Hardman today. I need to do that.
You'd rather have Juju than Hardman, I assume.
So this is why I think you would not. Ben, like, when is Ben going to be done? When is Ben retire?
Well, Juju's a free agent after the year, and he's not getting retired.
Do you want Juju changing a team after he comes off of?
That's why I want to trade him for David Montgomery.
Yeah, like 68 receptions, 700 yards, 4 touchdowns.
Why don't we want him changing a team? I think we need him to change a team.
Because he probably signs like a 2-year, $16 million Kelvin Benjamin deal. Seriously.
Yeah. But like, yeah. What's his future in Pittsburgh with all these good young wide receivers?
Yeah, it's no win.
Yeah, but it certainly adds some additional downside to where he ends up in one of these, like, he ends up being the guy the Jets bring in to turn it all around or something awful like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, so he could sign, yeah, let's say he signs in Arizona, right, and replaces Fitzgerald, right? Like, then you're like, oh my gosh, you're doing cartwheels. But if he signs in Oakland with Derek Carr and is playing with Ruggs,
that'd actually be pretty sweet because he plays out of the slot.
Yeah, but then he's competing with Waller and with Ruggs.
Yeah, I think Ruggs just might be a field stretcher, but I don't know.
Well, man, I don't know. I'm pretty high on Ruggs, I think, relative to the market.
Pat, what were the underlying peripherals from stat chasing on Juju? Anything interesting?
Well, the most interesting thing was that his yards per target this week was like absolutely pitiful. It was like 3 or below. And so it was like an especially gross week for him. But his like target stats and all of that were really low. He's still out there. I think 90%. He was out on 90% of dropbacks. So he's running a lot of routes, but he's not getting targets.
This he's Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, he's Tyler Higbee. Like, I don't get why he's not getting targeted. But at this point, it probably is. You probably are hoping for him to change offenses if you're holding him. But that does create even more downside risk because there are some really gross spots that he could land. And then, so at that point, like, I actually do wonder if he's maybe a guy you start shopping on name brand value.
I mean, I could never bring myself to trade away Juju. Like, I could never bring myself to trade away DJ Moore. I'll just ride it to the death.
But DJ Moore
looked awesome. Yeah. Like, the underlying stats for him this week were, like, out of this world.
Well, DJ Moore looks awesome at all times.
Yeah,
but DJ Moore say the same thing about Juju.
I actually don't feel that way about Juju a lot of the time, actually. Like, I feel like he always kind of looks, especially this season, I felt like he's looked pretty ginger out there. Like, I don't know. I feel way more impressed by Deontay Johnson and Claypool watching Steelers games than I do watching Juju.
Well, yeah, I mean, Chase Claypool is like the
most Where does Chase Claypool go in drafts next year?
He'll go in the right around like the fourth round. Like
DK Metcalf was going. Yeah.
Yeah.
He scored 6 touchdowns already.
Dude, I do think, like, I know I keep saying this and now it look, but like, he's going to have the Odell Beckham finish, man.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
it's the perfect thing analogy too. It was Eli was like dead ass at the time, but could just get the ball enough times to Odell to let him do damage. And that's what Big Ben is right now.
Yep. Yeah. I'm wondering if, cause like we see this stuff happen. We see this stuff happen all the time where young players are just, you know, crush it. And then in this case, in a weird way, the dusty veteran is Deontay Johnson returning. And like, I'm seriously wondering if Deontay Johnson's
rookie player.
I know, but that's what
Davis's world.
Deontay Johnson's a rookie last year.
But that's what I'm saying is like Johnson is the returning veteran to take the workload away from Claypool. And I'm wondering if Johnson earns such a target share that Claypool is like 18% of the targets the rest of the way with Johnson, with Ebron, with Juju and James Washington.
To continue my analogy, Deontay Johnson's the Sterling Shepherd alongside Odell here, man.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, people love Deontay Johnson. I was never one of those people. Like, I have none of the high stakes leagues.
We know there's room. Both there's room. Deontay Johnson and Claypool can crush.
Yeah, but
I think there's room. But James Washington is the dusty veteran. You know, he's in his third year. He's basically
I actually like James Washington too.
I think that Deontay comes back and gets his routes and Chase Claypool plays ahead of James Washington going forward. That would be my guess. Those guys, Johnson's been targeted on 28% of his routes, Claypool 24%. Washington's down at 19%, Juju's at 16%, and it's really gross for Juju because he has an ADOT of 4.7. When you're running an ADOT of 4.7, you should be getting targeted all the time. You're getting targeted, you're running super shallow routes. These guys who are running these crazy deep routes like Claypool, he's got an 8 out of 13.6. Get targeted 24% of the time is massive. So what you're seeing is that Claypool and Johnson are getting a ton of targets. They're driving this offense forward. I don't think they take Claypool off the field even when Johnson comes back. I think they take Washington off. And Juju essentially is off because he doesn't get targeted even though he runs all the routes.
Yeah, Juju is the Steelers' Larry Fitzgerald. He's the dusty old vet.
He is in his fourth year, so he is the dust.
It's so brutal. I think I saw Reeves tweet that he's basically like gotten the Larry Fitzgerald workload since week one.
We just need to keep going backwards until Davis is saying Cam Akers is just like the dustiest old 21-year-old running back in the league.
Yeah.
Man, I am like the biggest candidate to wherever Travis Etienne gets drafted next year. Peter probably doesn't even know who that is. He probably doesn't watch any football.
Clemson running back?
Wherever that guy gets drafted in the NFL draft, I am just like whatever I did with Clyde Edwards-Helaire this year in terms of like making ridiculous trades to get him on my roster, I'm going to do that so much harder for Travis Etienne. That dude is the best.
We're in a league together where I'm out tanking you. So just
not anymore. I think not after this week.
The 101's going to be available, Davis. You let me know. No,
here's the thing. It's not because this league that you're talking about where I tanked super hard, I somehow ended up with Mike Davis and he was crushing my tanking efforts. But I think that is going to be rectified. And you have Michael Thomas, who you've been getting no points from. And that's
about to trade him for Saquon Barkley. That's what Leone wants to do. So
I'll trade him Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Better.
I think we know it's time to wrap this up.
All right, yeah. I do want to ask, what's going on with Baltimore? Every single guy on here looks like a pro.
I did want to talk about this too.
Yeah, and it's like Andrews looks like a potential buy low. Marquise Brown looks like a huge.
He's like the biggest buy low in fantasy every week. Like the weekends. Every week. Yeah. He's third in the NFL in I do this janky version of Frisco Josh's buy low model where I don't adjust for like the catchability of the target or anything, which he does. I literally just sort by like unrealized air yards combined by targets minus receptions. And Marquise Brown has the third most unrealized fantasy points in football in terms of uncaught targets and unrealized air yards. So like he's left about 55 fantasy points out on the field.
Yeah. Because he keeps having these games where he's like efficient. Like this week, he was over 2 yards per out run. He played well. But then you're like, God damn, it could have been so much bigger. It's happened several times. So I don't know. I mean, then Mark Andrews he had a pretty good week last week, week 5, but this week was disappointing. The running backs, there's like not really much expected value in that backfield right now. So
Gus Edwards, man, he is just bumming everybody out. Gus Edwards
is not like, he's not even stealing that much. Like if you just sum up the value of the backfield, it's not that
bad. As a pie, it's been bad.
It's been bad, yeah.
I think it's just because they're not playing as fast.
Yeah.
And it's so weird. It's like they've yet to play a competitive game. They've either been blowing teams out or they've been winning the entire game. I guess the Eagles kind of caught up with them in the last game, but the offense wasn't playing like it in the second half, really. So it's just like they've really yet to be tested because they were out of it by halftime. What it was 28-3 at halftime, I think, against the Chiefs. Like it was just like, what's the point of even trying?
Right. Right. That's true. It has been weird. Maybe that is contributing to this a lot, but the Eagles game was pretty close. But yeah, it was kind of weird.
Wasn't close. I'm pretty sure it was 20-0 at half.
Uh huh. Yeah.
So it's just like which by the way just happens in football. Like weird stuff just happens in football and can happen for 16 games because football is really weird. I think we see a lot less Mark Ingram coming out of bye though. That's a take.
I like that take.
He's banged up too. The window is ajar for J.K. Dobbins' runaway here.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if Lamar, because remember 2 weeks ago he missed 2 days of practice with a knee thing. I'm wondering, and he only had 2 rushing attempts against the Bengals. So I'm wondering if there's just some weird health stuff with Lamar causing them to call plays like this. At least that's what I'm hoping as someone who is balls deep in Marquise Brown.
I'm pretty sure there's another way to put that, Davis.
Well, I mean, dude, it's just like I got so much Marquise Brown and Andy Isabella.
I just want to get balls deep in Dick Rod this week on the waiver.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we said it.
Balls deep in Miles Boykin, and that is not working
out. Yeah. Miles Boykin
is a thing now. He's a thing.
Well, the point is that even if Boykin was playing the snaps we thought he'd be playing to start the year, it doesn't matter at all because they're not throwing enough and they're not running enough plays for like an 8% target share to be anything.
Yeah.
All right, Davis.
All right.
Take us out.
Everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.